From the KTOO Newsroom, I'm Pablo Arauz Peña with a local and statewide news update. Juneau election officials finished processing ballots for the city's election on Friday. Results are still unofficial until the election is certified this week. In the two-way District 1 race, incumbent Alicia Hughes-Scandes leads opponent Kenny Solomon-Gross by more than 1,000 votes. Christine Wall remains in the lead in the District 2 Juneau Assembly race by a comfortable margin. Candidates in the area-wide Assembly race and school board races ran unopposed. Assemblymember Maria Gledeshevsky and school board president Brian Holst won re-election. Martin Stepton will also serve on the board. Ballot Proposition 1 failed and Ballot Proposition 2 passed. This was Juneau's first by-mail election. Ballots were sent to Anchorage for processing. Voter turnout this year was 42%. That's the best turnout Juneau has seen in 20 years. The future of permanent fund dividend checks is one of the most pressing issues facing state lawmakers. Candidates vying for a state House seat in November in Southeast Alaska's District 36 see the issue differently, but less differently than it might seem. KRBD's Eric Stone reports.
Republican House hopeful Leslie Becker has gone after independent Representative Dan Ortez's position on permanent fund dividends. The conservative Republican has campaigned on what she calls protecting the PFD.
43.23.025 is the formula for the PFD. It's on the books. It's illegal not to follow it.
That's Becker speaking at a recent KRBD forum. That formula was codified as part of a 1982 law. Ortez countered that it's not so clear cut.
I would say this, that we do have conflicting statutes on the books.
That's because a 2018 law limits the legislature's draw on the fund to roughly 5% of its market value. And that makes the 1982 formula just about impossible to follow. Courts have upheld the lower dividend payments. Many candidates and lawmakers around the state say they'd like a full PFD. Governor Mike Dunleavy campaigned in 2018 on giving full dividend checks to every man, woman, and child in Alaska, roughly $3,000 in 2018. Other Republican candidates, particularly those in the more conservative wing of the party, have expressed similar views, as have some Democrats. And voters could be forgiven for thinking a full statutory PFD is what Becker's advocating for, too. In July, she, along with many other candidates and lawmakers, signed a document that expresses support for, quote, following the law regarding the traditional PFD distribution.
What these candidates are saying that signed this, they're saying that there was nothing wrong with the traditional formula.
That's conservative activist Michael Chambers. He leads a coalition of right-leaning groups called United for Liberty, and he wrote the document that Becker signed. The second half of it expresses support for paying the difference between what the formula says and what lawmakers and the governor approved. The last dividend paid out under the formula was in 2015. At the KRBD forum, Ortez challenged Becker directly about that document.
Do you still stand by that pledge?
He said that following through on that support would cost the state upwards of $4 billion and reduce the future earnings of the permanent fund. And that, he says, would only make the state's already bleak budget picture even worse.
Actually, Dan, I think you should read the wording on that. It doesn't say pledge. It says I.
Now, with the election weeks away, she says there's some wiggle room. She says it's less a document promising $3,000 PFDs and more a commitment to following a transparent formula set out in law.
People are frustrated. So what we need to do is clean this up.
But in an email to KRBD, she says that's not the same thing as supporting a full dividend under the 1982 formula. At the forum, she said she'd support changing the formula to reflect what the state can actually afford.
It's time to get together, get to the table, and get it resolved so we have the appropriate amount put in place, the formula is revised, and whatever else needs to be adjusted so it's transparent to the people.
And Chambers, the conservative activist, says that's not contrary to the statement that Becker signed.
Like, I have no problem with the legislature going in and saying, we're going to revisit this statute and we're going to reconstitute a statute that derives how we're going to pay out the permanent fund dividend.
On that point, Becker looks to have found some common ground with her opponent.
I would be in support of looking at that original statute and revising it.
But Ortez says it won't be easy to change the formula.
The problem is you need to get 21 votes in the House, and then you need to get 11 votes in the Senate. for that particular reform to take place. And then, of course, you have to have the signature of the governor.
Lawmakers have floated the idea before, but it's always died before reaching the governor's desk. Ortez and Becker are vying to represent House District 36, which includes Ketchikan, Wrangell, Metlakatla, Hyder, Myers-Chuck, and Heidelberg. Election day is November 3rd. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Eric Stone.
The Alaska Federation of Natives' first virtual convention came to a close on Friday afternoon. Keeping with their theme of Good Government, Alaskans Decide, the day started with two of Alaska's congressional incumbents making the case for why they should keep their posts. KOTZ's Wesley Early reports.
Congressman Don Young and U.S. Senator Dan Sullivan, both Republicans, are running for re-election this year and made a point to highlight their bona fides when addressing AFN convention attendees. Young, who has served in Congress a couple years short of five decades, spoke first and took the time to discuss his work in granting land access to Alaska Natives.
There's not much I haven't done you've asked me to do. Transfer of land in Nana is one of them, a transfer of land in the Chugiak region, down in the southeast Alaska, all these different areas of Sea Alaska Lands deal. I ask you to think about that because this is important.
Young also maintained his disappointment at a D.C. Circuit Court ruling that Alaska Native corporations were ineligible for tribal funding set aside in the Federal CARES Act. He said most of the opposition to granting those funds to ANCs came from lower 48 Native tribes.
The tribes in the lower 48, not all tribes, by the way. I've got good relationships with a lot of the tribes. They're just the tribes that had the casinos. They wanted to take and relieve their loss of casinos. And so I am suggesting I think we'll win in the Supreme Court.
Several Alaska Native tribes were also part of the lawsuit seeking to exclude ANCs from that funding. Young bookended his speech with a push to also re-elect Senator Sullivan, describing the Alaska delegation as a united team. Sullivan didn't mention the election as explicitly, instead opting to discuss his congressional accomplishments. Like Young, he mentioned Native land access while also defending his record on rural Alaska public safety. Sullivan highlighted his bringing U.S. Attorney General William Barr to the state to see the difficulties faced by Alaska law enforcement. He also brought up the Power Act, a bill he authored to give legal resources to survivors of domestic and sexual assault. It was signed into law in 2018.
The victims, we all know them. They're our sisters, our mothers, our spouses, our aunties, our daughters, and this is an issue that impacts all of us.
Young and Sullivan's opponents, independent candidates Elise Galvin and Al Gross, both had smaller chances to make their platforms heard by convention attendees, relegated to pre-recorded video interviews with AFN leadership. Similar interviews with Young and Sullivan, in addition to their other appearances, aired during the convention. Speaking to reporters over Zoom, AFN officials said that the pandemic did shift focus from certain government-related topics, like the redistricting process. However, AFN co-chair Anna Hoffman argues the topics that were discussed, like the census, getting out the vote, and government response to the pandemic, all relate to the theme of good government.
I don't think our theme has been set aside because of the pandemic. I think, in fact, they're complementary. It really does show the need for our continued involvement and participation.
One of the decisions that Alaska Natives typically make at AFN is voting on various resolutions. Due to the virtual nature of this year's convention, that had to change. Greg Razzo, chairman of AFN's Resolutions Committee, says that due to the difficulties in getting members to participate equally in a virtual forum, political candidates hoping to get the endorsement of the body will have to look elsewhere.
No 2020 convention endorsements of candidates or ballot initiatives will be considered for 2020.
In 2016, the AFN board made an unprecedented move to formally endorse Hillary Clinton for president of the United States. The board generally considers itself to be nonpartisan. Razzo says this year's AFN resolutions will be voted on at a December board meeting. One decision that AFN members were able to decide on at the convention was on a new co-chair. Incumbent Will Mayo said he wouldn't run for re-election. Joe Nelson of Sea Alaska Native Corporation was elected to replace Mayo. In his remarks, Nelson highlighted his own Native values and how they benefit Native people.
And I'm looking forward to us embracing the competitive advantages that those values have given us. We're all connected to each other. We're all connected to this place. We're not going anywhere. And we know how to vote
Cutting the traditionally three-day event short a day, the 2020 AFN convention ended Friday afternoon. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Wesley Early.
And you're listening to KTOO News.